From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Juneteenth Day, 2020. In a book about her career, a nurse told a strange story about a young married couple who couldn't understand why they weren't getting pregnant. Well, the nurse found the answer. It turns out they weren't having sex and they didn't know that's where babies come from. Yep, youth is wasted on the young. And as long as we're on that subject, the New York City Health Department released guidelines for having sex during the pandemic. Surprisingly, it says nothing about the backseat of a Chevy. And speaking of cars, did you hear about this? The Ford Motor Company is introducing the brand new Ford Bronco next month on O.J. Simpson's birthday. Wow, what a coincidence. And finally, a duck walks into a bar. That sounds like a setup to a joke, but it's for real. At a British pub, a duck has become a regular and developed a real taste for beer. Well, the duck got into a fight with a dog at the pub and came out a little for the worse for wear, but the dog hasn't been seen since. Then the victorious duck bought the house around and said, "Put it on my bill."
Oh.
Okay, I made up that last part.
Yeah.
On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Yeah, thanks, Maxwell. We made a few nickels this week. NASDAQ up 3.7%, rising 357 points to close 99.46, fourth highest close on record for the NASDAQ. S&P stock composite 500 up 1.9% this week, tacking on 57 points to close at 3,098. Dow Jones Industrial Average added 267 points this week for a 1% rise. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 25,873. Year to date, NASDAQ up a stellar 11.4%. S&P 500 down 3.2%, including dividends year to date. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 8.2% so far this year. Well, the market's got a pretty good lift on Monday after the Fed talked about its bond buying efforts. Stocks rose 157 points. Tuesday, the market loved the retail sales report. More on that later. Dow rose 526 points. What a great day. A little bit of profit taking on Wednesday. Dow fell 170 points, fell another 39 points on Thursday, and we were down 208 points today. So net-net, we made a few dollars. You know, Kyle, almost everyone that I talk to is spending less money now with the pandemic. I think it's your best economic indicator that I can put my fingers on. Until people feel safe to be out and about, they're just flat out not going to be spending as much. And it's almost across the board. You know, I talk to clients all day long, every day of the week, and I'm astonished at how, with very, very few exceptions, people just aren't spending what they used to spend. I talked to one client the other day, said the guy in retirement, he and his wife go out to lunch 6 days a week on average. He hasn't been out to lunch since early March. I mean, just to give you an idea. And you know, the retail sales numbers came out. They were impressive. But economists are a little concerned about, you know, how much of that was inflated with the stimulus money when the extended unemployment benefits program runs out at the end of July. You know, what kind of hit will the retail sales see? But, you know, Kyle, people are spending less, and that's the direction of the economy, at least for now, until people feel safe to go out and spend their money.
You know, Bob, I think what's interesting is some of this is virus imposed. Some of it is, you know, we just can't spend in the places that we used to spend. If you had a big trip planned, it's likely that got canceled. If you were, you know, planning to go visit your kids in another state, even, you know, your modes of transportation have largely been shut down as well. And so, you know, as you look at kind of the typical big ticket purchases, a lot of those big ticket purchases are off the board for a while. And so what's left is, you know, the things like you mentioned, the going out to eat. And again, there, you know, with most restaurants either shut down or with, I think, many diners worried about what it would mean to sit inside a restaurant, be besides someone who could potentially be sick. I think it's clear that, you know, part of this is I don't want to expose myself that way. And some of it also is just that the things that you would spend money on aren't able to take your money right now. And so, you know, I think you do the math on kind of what that means for the economy. And it's no wonder that we, you know, officially now have entered recession. It's no wonder that consumer spending fell off as much as it did. It's no wonder that stocks, I think, had the fall that they did when it was becoming evident that what was going to happen as a result of the shutdown of the economy is exactly what we saw. And so, you know, I think we saw more news today with Apple this afternoon announcing they're shutting down 11 stores in 4 states because of an increase in cases in those states. I think what we're seeing is that it's absolutely driven by the virus right now. Markets are reacting more and more and ongoing to, you know, kind of case counts to what the various states look like. And so, you know, I think today was a great example. You had a little bit of a positive day through noon, and then at lunch, Apple made that announcement, and all of a sudden stocks sold off pretty significantly. And I think we'll continue to see that, you know, largely driven by that, the exact thing you're talking about, by less consumer spending, by individuals just finding that they can get by spending a little bit less right now.
You know, Kyle, we got this tug of war going on. Markets do well when we get favorable economic news or comments from the Fed. Markets tend to get hurt as investors continue to worry that a rising number of virus cases will hurt our chances of economic recovery. As you know, more than a dozen states have seen record cases of infections recently. The virus continues to spread, you know, will the U.S. continue to reopen? You know, maybe not. Art, let's bring you into the show here for a little bit. What do you think about current events?
Wow, you set me up for that. That's the most open question you possibly could have asked.
Trying to help you, pal.
Yeah, thanks, pal. A number of different words come to mind. One I'm going to suggest is one that you've used so frequently and that I've learned from you over the decades, and that's humility. And I think we have to be very cautious in trying to think that we really know what's going to happen. The investors that I've talked with who've made the biggest mistakes, I think, are those who literally are looking for certainty. And you're not going to find it right now. This market's been going up despite the uncertainty because we're looking to the future for what might lie beyond the uncertainty that we have to deal with right now. There's an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal this week that quite frankly, I found shocking. It referenced a Fidelity study that said nearly a third of investors aged 65 and up sold all of their stock holdings sometime between February and May, compared with 18% of investors across all age groups. That just made me feel very, very good about what we do, how we coach and counsel our clients, and how we develop balanced portfolios that help them get through this type of uncertainty so they can reap the benefits that they deserve from investing for the long haul. So again, Bob, humility is my word for today, and I thank you for providing me with that opportunity.
Art, I saw that Fidelity study as well and was shocked by the 18% overall sold their stocks and went to cash. You think about all those poor people that potentially have permanently impaired their portfolios. They eliminate their ability to recover. Very few people saw the recovery, you know, from the March 23 lows being so rapid. Pretty hard to predict, and it's just this, people tend to make trades based on emotions, and emotions are, it's not an investment strategy. It's not something that you want to use to drive your portfolio, and it's unfortunate. It's really good to build balanced accounts, because you don't want to be that one out of five people that impair their life savings by just getting out of the market entirely. Joel, let's bring you in. Retail sales up 17.7% in May, following the largest drop on record in April, according to the Commerce Department. Measured from a year ago, retail sales are down 6.1% from year ago May. And I think the issue right now is how much has the stimulus spending helped retail, and will it fade when the extended unemployment checks potentially run out at the end of July? Joel, what are your comments on the retail sales report?
Yeah, but those are all great questions, and you know, I think a lot of it revolves around, you know, the confidence people have, you know, not just the money that's in their pocket, but people who go out to eat on a regular basis, and all of a sudden they're not doing that anymore. One of the numbers from the retail sales that I like to follow is looking at sales at restaurants and bars. It's not a big amount of all the money that's spent on retail, but it's a really good indication of discretionary income. If people are feeling confident of spending their money, that's usually something that they'll do. So that went down, you know, that plunged like everything else in April, and it, like everything else, rebounded in May, but it's still at the lowest level in more than a decade. So the number of sales that they had at restaurants and bars in May was back to where we were in 2010. I think a lot of the indicators that we're looking at are showing a rebound in the economy, that we're seeing better numbers, as we did with the employment numbers a couple of weeks ago. But it's a question of how far back we'll bounce. And I think retail is a good example of that. And you're right. I mean, a lot of that stimulus money was meant for this very thing, to get people out to restaurants, to get them buying clothes. Clothing sales went up 188% last month from the month before that. Furniture sales went up 90% from the month before, but they both plunged a lot farther than that. So we're still looking at what the stimulus does, and also, you know, what people's confidence does.
Joel, as you know, the Labor Department reported Thursday that first-time claims for unemployment fell slightly to 1.5 million, still a gigantic number. 20.5 million people are still out of work, down from a peak of 25 million in early May. But hundreds of thousands of people are still losing their jobs.
It's amazing, Bob. You know, we're seeing those numbers go down gradually, only week to week from historic highs a few weeks ago. But so we usually look at the 4-week moving average, just because it evens out these numbers, which tend to be pretty volatile week to week. But it almost doesn't matter because they're so high anyway. If the 4-week average last week went down to 2 million, below 2 million, for the first time in 12 weeks. The record peak before that was 674,000 in 1982. So it's just off the charts what these are showing. And you're right. I mean, you know, we thought that employment was looking pretty good at the Labor Department employment report last month. But to have another 1.5 million Americans file new claims is just astounding.
Kyle, as you know, Jay Powell, testifying to the U.S. Senate on Tuesday, said the high unemployment and a wave of small business failures will damage the economy long term. The chairman anticipates the economy moving through three phases: shutting down, bouncing back, and then stabilizing a level of activity that is lower than just before the pandemic. Economists now predict that it could take years for the economy to fully recover. So Powell's probably right about the three stages. You know, the $64,000 question is, when do we get to the stabilized level of activity? My guess is that's when the vaccine shows up. Kyle, what do you think?
You know, I think you look at the conversation that we've been having for the vast majority of today's show, and I think it's absolutely about when people feel confident spending again, when people have the ability to spend again. And so when you look at the economy and you look at jobs in particular, you know, corporations, I think, were doing everything they could to preserve cash. You had a record amount of money come back to the U.S., you know, repatriated foreign earnings come back to the U.S. in the first quarter, more money than what corporations made overseas in the first quarter, all in an effort to boost balance sheets. You had layoffs, I think, in anticipation, or certainly right in line with the shutdown of the economy, so that businesses could preserve cash to get through. That works if you're a Fortune 500 or if you're a, you know, an employer with hundreds of employees. You can you know, lay off a portion of your staff until you get back to a place where you can bring it back. That doesn't work if you're a small business of one or two individuals. And I think, you know, when you look broadly at the economic impact of a lot of smaller businesses essentially folding up and not coming back, that I think is what Paul's talking about when he says you have this phase of bounce back, but then you have a stabilization that's somewhat below where we were pre-pandemic. And a lot of that is because those small businesses aren't going to come back the way they did. Those people are looking for different jobs. And so, I think when we look at the employment picture in particular, and I think that's the thing that's going to drive the level of economic output post-vaccine, post-bounce back when we get into that stabilization period, what we're really trying to figure out is how many of those lost jobs come back and how quickly do they come back. And I think what Powell and many economists have pointed out is that we probably have to operate in an environment of higher unemployment than what we had been seeing, especially, you know, the few months prior to the pandemic, but even, really the better part of the last 5 years when unemployment's been fairly low. And so I think, you know, that's a pretty significant headwind to economic growth. There's ways to grow the economy with higher unemployment through productivity growth. Certainly, I think that a pandemic forces some productivity growth that maybe we hadn't anticipated. But ultimately, you'd rather have people working. You'd rather have jobs because those are people who can go out and spend money.
Kyle, let's talk about bond yields here for a minute. The 10-year Treasury yield fell late this week. The Labor Department report, more people out of work. As you know, the 10-year Treasury yield hit almost 1% a couple of weeks ago. Yields dropped to 70 basis points. That's a pretty good drop in interest rates in just a couple of weeks. And it comes right on the heels of a pretty good uptick in infections, particularly Arizona, Florida, Texas, North Carolina, that really wasn't anticipated. So it gives you the sense that the bond market is partially driven by infection rates, and people are saying, okay, wait, we better maybe go more to fixed income if the virus infection counts are going up. But, give or take a 30 basis point drop in the 10-year in a couple of weeks seems like a lot.
It absolutely does, Bob. And obviously, you know, investors have to remember that bond prices or the value of your bonds moves inversely to yield. And so, what that means in English is that if those yields are falling, you're getting a little bit more money in your bonds. They're worth a little bit more. And I think the challenge there is that happened at a time when stocks were rallying as well, other than last week. And so really what we've seen is that correlations among asset classes have started to rise. And that's a sign that maybe things aren't as healthy as what many people would like you to believe, that simply stock market recoveries don't mean that the market overall is healthy. It may, on the other hand, mean that we were coming back from some pretty significant declines as we did. And so I think one of the things that, you know, I continue to keep an eye on is what correlations look like longer term, because if stocks and bonds are going to keep moving in the same direction, that means there aren't as many places to hide. And, you know, we like our bonds because they provide some stability when stocks sell off. But again, if they're not going to do that, then we've really got to think, okay, what other options do we have? Now, the good news there is that it's going to be real difficult for rates to move quickly higher. And that would be the thing in higher quality bonds that would challenge bond prices. But obviously, in the absence of any real inflationary pressure, and with the likelihood that the Fed keeps rates low for a very long time, I think we have some still safety in bonds. But I do think that at least the last couple of weeks have raised some questions about what correlations look like.
Kyle, finally, you know, again, I crunched the numbers on earnings after Joel was kind enough to give us the fact set information. Folks, what we're talking about is earnings for the S&P 500. This year, they're predicted to go down 21.6%. Next year, they're supposed to go up 28.7%. So that seems like a big number. Let me tell you the math on this one. If you do a net-net on the calculation, means we're looking at potentially a 0.9% increase over a 2-year period for the markets. And what I love about stock prices is they're fairly accurate at predicting the near future anyway. And the market coming back almost even, give or take, is kind of looking into next year and saying, hey, wait, you know, we're going to get back to the earnings of last year, 163 for the S&P, and what will move the higher market higher, of course, into the fall next winter will be the big money looking into 2022. But net on earnings for this year and next year, pretty hard to get excited about less than a 1% net increase on the earnings score.
I'm with you there, Bob. I think the one saving grace may be that there's going to be pockets of some pretty strong earnings growth in there. There are certainly businesses out there that have the opportunity to find ways to make money over the next year or two, even above and beyond what, you know, kind of broadly the S&P is set to earn. And so, you know, if all you're doing is picking the S&P and saying, here's where we're going to be, it's a great way to get a rough estimate of, you know, where we think markets broadly are headed. I think it tells you very little about, you know, more importantly and more specifically what the opportunity set is in some very particular areas of the market. And so, you know, you look at, parts of the market that maybe have been less impacted by the virus, but whose growth stories are still intact. And, you think of some of those technology names out there that we've been, I think so encouraged by for a long time. They've still got some pretty strong earnings growth ahead of them. And so I think you're absolutely right. There's some serious questions about where earnings end this year. I think there's a pretty significant lack of clarity, at least for a while, about the direction of earnings. But I think at some point in time, if you talk about the economic picture of, again, kind of that shutdown phase, that bounce back phase, and then a stabilization phase, and at some point in time, we get into the bounce back for earnings. And then at some point in time, we get into that stabilization. And as, you know, I think what we're seeing right now for the forecast is we stabilize right around where we were prior to all this happening. I think that says everything you need to know about kind of where the markets are headed from here, you know, how we got to where we already are. But I think it maybe doesn't give you as much nuance on what the investment opportunity set really is. And that's where active management comes in and says, okay, that's great that the S&P is going to, you know, roughly break even over the next, you know, 3 years, really going from 2019 earnings through to 2022. But the reality is there's going to be pockets that are making good money. And, you know, I think that's the opportunity that really we care about is not what the market does broadly, but how we can capture the opportunities within it.
Thank you, Kyle, for that. Well, folks, this is the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the show, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.